Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies brought to you with the support of the School of Business, Management, and Economics at the University of Sussex. This is the first part of episode 53, where we are discussing the movie Modern Times, released in 1936 by United Artists and starring Charlie Chaplin, who also directed and produced the film. To watch the movie and for more information, please visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. This is Tom calling from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States.
This is Pedro coming to you from Lyon, just the day before the beautiful Light Festival that's starting this week here.
This is Greta coming to you from Oxford.
This is Miranda coming to you from Leamington Spa in the UK.
This is Ella coming to you from Amsterdam in the Netherlands. Today we are discussing an iconic film, and this is a 1936 silent film, mostly, although sound is being introduced, and it's called Modern Times. It's a classic by Charlie Chaplin, who directed the film, stars in the film, even did the music for the film. This is a film that's really about industrialization, and we thought that that's a perfect opportunity to add a bit of variety to our podcast and link back to themes that we've already discussed and introduce some new ones. So really looking forward to discussing this film with you all today.
Yeah, thanks very much for that, Ella. It was fascinating to watch the film because I had never seen it before myself, and it's great that it's available in the public domain. I mean, there's a lot of places online where you can go ahead and sit down and watch it. And it was really a fascinating film just to kind of see how some of the complaints or the criticisms of what was going on in the industrial world during the early part of the 20th century is just sort of put out there. You know, some of it was comedy, but some of it was very biting social commentary, which I'm sure we can get into.
Yeah, the tone of this film is just constantly on the edge of tragic and comic. We follow a character which Charlie Chaplin has played in a number of films. It's known as the Tramp. And this character begins with a role in a factory where he's working on a production line. And we get to see this factory, first of all, from the perspective of management, a nice manager sitting behind a nice desk, all very clean and neat. And then he speaks down to his foreman and gives instructions to speed up production. And that's where we meet Charlie Chaplin in his tramp role, working away on the production line. And from there, the sort of comedy and the tragedy ensues. So really keen to hear what you all made of this film and its connections to the themes that we explore in the podcast.
Well, the first thing I want to say is that although we are doing a movie instead of, you know, a book or paper, I think it has all the traits of a typical talking about organization object or issue to be discussed because it's from 1936, but again, it's still very current. Although it's talking about the factory work most of the time, although it seems, you know, it's black and white and it seems old, but I think the issues are very relevant.
Well, how about we just kind of start with that first situation with the factory, the initial factory that the tramp is working in, and the conditions, because it's really kind of funny and tragic all at once, where, you know, you start out, the movie actually starts out with sort of an image of sheep, and then it shifts to the image of workers going to the factory as sort of drawing a parallel about the helplessness and the compliance that these workers face. And so then we get into this factory situation, as Ella described. The manager or the leader is sitting at a nice desk, totally isolated, but has the ability to inject himself into the workings of the factory through telescreens or what have you. For example, he interrupts the tramp taking off for a smoke break, who's just looking for a minute of respite, and then suddenly the owner's appearance, it's like the telescreen from 1984.
Yeah.
That from George Orwell. And said, you know, get back to work. Mm-hmm. And it was funny the way that Chaplin reacted and responded, but it was very unsettling all at once.
Going back to one of the initial shots of the sheep, it's true that there is this idea of helplessness, but there's also one of the sheep which is black, which I'm supposing is going to represent Charlie Chaplin in the film. So I think this already introduces the idea that one person, the protagonist, will not align to what society wants, to what the workplace wants. And this is kind of clear later on, where actually you see that the character just kind of lights up every time there's an opportunity to be happy. And just skipping a couple of bits and then we'll go back to it. I think this ties in neatly when he wants to go back to prison, or he wants to stay in prison, because he says, I'm happy here. So you have this idea that work is not supposed to make you happy. You're not supposed to be happy. And this is the only person there who really wants to be happy. Not sure if I skipped too many themes, but that was kind of one of my first takes on the initial scenes.
Yeah, I think that also closely links to the opening title of the movie, which is the story of industry, of individual enterprise, humanity crusading in the pursuit of happiness.
Oh, yes, and, true.
I thought that was beautiful language to kind of cover, and also putting a lot of question marks for the audience, like what to expect. But I think it's a beautiful opening title, I think, that captures very well kind of the sentiment and the feeling that goes through the entire movie.
That's another interesting issue about the movie, and I think it's particularly interesting for us, is that it really crystallizes a number of themes that we have explored in the past 50 episodes in the podcast. And just some of the themes that you guys mentioned was, you know, the whole issue about the leader being able to see the workers, and, you know, you can think of parallels about the gig economy today and how in Uber there is all kind of new metrics and algorithmic management, which we talked about in episode 18, and also the whole discussion about socialization and the story of Charlie being this kind of, you know, unable to adjust worker that's, in a way we could say, is not completely socialized in the factory and in the overall corporate culture. So we talked about socialization in episode 38, and about culture in episode 48. So there is a lot of, it pulls a number of threads we have been exploring, I think, in the podcast.
Now let's focus in on a couple of the particular events that were driving the story of the movie, because I think these events are, they'll just be fun to discuss. And we might as well start with one of the ones from the beginning, the feeding machine. And yes. Just for context, let's think about this. Okay, so you have this man, the manager, who is obviously portrayed as being somewhat isolated from what's going on the floor. And some inventors walk in with this huge contraption, and they sell the idea that if you connect this machine to workers, and the machine's purpose is to feed the workers while they're working, then you could add to production by removing, you know, by keeping the workers on the line, and then you would retain your competitive advantage. And this is sufficient for the manager to go ahead and actually test it on one of the employees, who just turns out to be the tramp. I'll give you my reaction in a moment, but please, what did you all think of that whole scenario?
Can I also add something, which I think I admit, this is one of my favorite films. I've seen it too many times, but every time I rewatch it, there's always something that I've missed. And what I missed here was the fact that the salesperson is a mechanical voice. It's something mechanical, even the salesperson. I'm not sure if you picked up on that.
Yes.
So you're even dehumanizing sales. And I thought this was hilarious.
Miranda, this is a really nice point, because I was reading about the film and someone has picked up on that every time you hear a voice in this film, because this was still just on the cusp of the time of talkies, they were still mostly silent films. Whenever you hear a human voice, it's through a machine. So the example that was given earlier of the manager speaking to Charlie Chaplin while he's in the toilet, that's via a telescreen. So it's a mechanical voice. And the Billows feeding machine is also introduced by a mechanical voice. So it's a theme throughout the film, which is so clever, but very subtle.
In that sense, it's also a response to the time this movie was made, where already for 10 years they made movies with audio and where people were speaking. Charlie kind of said, like, this is not my thing. And I read about it in some of the reviews of this movie that he had some conversations prepared for the movie. And when they recorded it, he said, like, no, we're not going to do it. And in that sense, I reflect upon the movie. I watched it twice and I made some notes, like things that I found striking. And so, like, the way voice is entered into this movie is kind of a reaction to the changes in the film industry. But then also, like, the way the mechanics in the movie, like the production line and the work that that Charlie does is being portrayed is also very funny. For instance, I was watching together with my housemate who has a background in mechanical engineering, and he said the way Charlie tightens the bolts, he is actually untightening them. He's undoing them. He does it the wrong way. So there's this saying, lefty loosey, righty tighty. And that's kind of like a way to remember how to turn the bolts. And he is doing it in the opposite way. And when you go back to the feeding machine, like, the funny thing is that, like, the automatic voice says, like, feeding your men while at work, increase production, eliminate lunch hours. But actually the machine is placed over the production line. So even when the machine would work, the worker would not be able to see what he's actually working on. And I thought these are just so funny details in this movie, which some of the sarcasm and the subtle criticism being weaved into it. I really liked it.
Well, one of the things that struck me as I was watching that particular scene with the feeding machine was the idea that I wondered if the audience in 1936, if there was actually somebody in the audience who looked at that and said, why didn't I think of that?
Well, but I think I have a point about that. Because in a way, of course, the grand theme here is Taylorism, which we explored in episode one. But I think that in a way that is like a nightmarish or our sarcastic view on Taylorism, not the Taylorism that we discussed, that's much more complex and has polyedric, you know, has multiple perspectives and ideas inbuilt in that on how, you know, when you read the original Taylor. Because one could argue that the fact that the workers have a break, it's perfectly, you know, aligned with a proper Tayloristic idea, because Taylor was all about understanding what is the physical limit of people, not overstressing the body, being able to provide some basic welfare for the workers. I mean, he doesn't say it's in the language we understand today, but there is a lot that is about not just overworking people, but finding the balance and making able to, in a way, force them to be engaged, because, you know, it is the task is designed in a way that they cannot just slack. But so one could argue that the fact that they have a break is already a Tayloristic idea. You see what I'm trying to say?
Oh, yeah. And I was thinking about, you know, what you're saying, that if we really were, like, you know, let's set the comedy aside, but if we really were thinking about what a Taylorist factory would look like, that same sort of a production line, it would be more like somebody standing with the three workers on the line, one doing the tightening of the bolts, one hitting with the hammer, and whatever the third gentleman was doing, and trying to find the way in which they would be able to increase their own productivity, as opposed to having the manager off in, you know, the high tower declaring, turn it up to 4.1, turn it up to 4.7. Max, though, I wanted to go at max speed without, you know, all he's doing is reading the newspaper. So there's definitely a difference there, I think.
I think that the issue of the clock, which is so linked to Taylorism, is introduced as a character and sort of parodied also throughout the film. It's one of the first scenes we see is of a big clock, and then you see the workers clocking into work. And the first thing that the manager is commanding his workers to do, or commanding the foreman to do, is indeed more speed. And we hear about the lunch hour, and this notion of constant speeding up and efficiency is an ongoing theme that drives the introduction of the bellows feeding machine. And then what I love about that scene is that it brings up this beautiful contrast between the promise of the technology and the reality. So I use this in teaching because, you know, if we're talking to students about technology management, this scene is a beautiful example of what the vendor will say about what a technology can do for your efficiency and productivity. Eliminate the lunch hour. I mean, it's a horrendous proposition, but it still has echoes of things you would hear now. And then they wheel the machine down onto the factory floor and put it to the test to see how it actually plays out. And it's hilarious how badly this machine performs. And that's, of course, what we often see with technology implementation, especially when it has this top-down approach, is you put it in with the workers and haywire ensues. So it's a nice way to highlight that. But it does not lead to greater efficiency at all.
Yeah. I'm wondering who's going to – if you buy a whole bunch of these machines, who's going to fill it up with food? Who's going to clean and sanitize? There's all sorts of stuff that just gets totally overlooked. You know, just no, more efficient, eliminate the lunch hour. You know, darn the consequences, the sort of thing.
Exactly, exactly. And then there's this, when they're trialing the billows feeding machine, of course, there's this beautiful moment where they're trying to repair it because it's not functioning properly and Charlie Chaplin's getting food shoved all over himself and he's barely able to breathe. And as they're fixing it, some bolts slip onto the plate. And so the next pieces of food that get pushed into his mouth are actually machinery. They're bolts. And this, I think, is just a brilliant metaphor for the wider themes of the whole film, which is really about dehumanization and the fact that the human worker is not only put to work in the form of a machine, tightening bolts on the production line, but then also starting to eat the metal and becoming sort of less human in that process. So it's this constant balancing of very comedic moments, but very profound statements that is pretty genius.
Now, a big part of the movie, especially in when we move to the middle parts, seems to be associated with the tramp's attempts to try to rehumanize himself and rehumanize the environment around him. And let me just kind of mention, you know, there is another protagonist or a major character who comes in, the gamine, who is she's orphaned during the early part of the film. She and a couple of her, I guess, siblings are left without a father who dies tragically. The younger orphans are brought off to an orphanage, but the gamine, the older one, she's, you know, about, I guess, supposed to be a late teen, escapes and then becomes a street urchin. And then she and the tramp in the various times in which the tramp's misadventures land him in jail and other sorts of things, they wind up connecting and bonding. And this comes to the point where the two of them are sort of looking at a happy couple at a house, and they recognize kind of what's missing in their lives is having this, you know, this kind of a peaceful and happy lifestyle that's been kind of denied to them because of their plights, to the point where she finds herself or she finds them this horrendous looking shack. And they decide that they're going to turn that into a home. And it's I thought it was a very touching scene because it really shows the motivation of the characters that they're willing to go ahead and, you know, demonstrate that they're aspiring to this idea of building a home for themselves while basically she is trying to be a domestic, providing dinner or whatever for the tramp. Meanwhile, he's sitting there and the floorboards are cracking. His chair falls through the floor and all of these other mishaps, but they don't care. They are just so wedded to the theme of wanting to have this home that, you know, so what if it's a shack? It's our shack.
That's a great, great point you're making there, Tom. And I think that also links back to the opening, introduction where they say like that they're in the pursuit of happiness, and I think that that's really being portrayed in the middle of the movie, but at the same time we're actually also So we're looking at the human needs. We're learning about that, but at the same time, we're zooming out. We're zooming out of the factory, which is closed at the moment. And we kind of start to learn about the consequences of the industrialization taking place. Factories being closed, unionization, difficult word, happening, people going on strikes. There's a lot of strikes and riots. There's hunger. People not having firewood, people not having food, the rise of communism is emerging in the movie. And, so we learn a lot about, kind of the context in which, the first episode where we have to position it, and also the challenging conditions in which people are pursuing the happiness.
In a way, the movies are very, and after we leave the factory, you know, we can say that it's almost like multiple parts. There is like the beginning in which it's all about the factory, and then we go out, and, you know, as Tom described, the encounter with the other protagonists and the attempt to build a life, and then other things happen in the movie. But throughout, there is a very strong biting social commentary on the conditions of life that you have been referring to, exactly the consequence of industrialization, the social conditions, the riots, the hunger. So in a way is, and if you think about it in an analytical way, it's interesting because it's trying to go outside the understanding of what is modern society and what is even modern work and how it is interconnected with a number of other social phenomena, which is something that we, again, have discussed multiple times in the podcast. You know, it reminds things related to Maslow that we discussed in episode 3 on human needs. You know, so if you can think about, to go back to the issue of the inadequacy of Charlie Chaplin's character at the factory in a number of workplaces, the fact that he's unscrewing the bolts instead of screwing them, can be related to the fact that his very life, his basic human needs is not satisfied. He's a completely person that struggles in all the different works he's assumed and tries to engage with because it's there's something lacking at the pace.
But I think it's also interesting that all of this happens once he's left the factory. So you have, going back to the first scenes, you have this very Tayloristic world. And then you have an opening of a wider picture. And actually, if you think about it, the factory setting is actually quite precise because and specific in the sense that you don't really know what the factory is working on. And the workers are just doing a very small, repetitive task. And they don't really see the final product or the wider picture. And this is actually one of the main criticisms that we also discussed towards the Tayloristic approach.
No, and that's, you know, it's the whole, I'm sorry, but, you know, I can't help but see almost everything that has been written about modern organization on the on the movie. But it's the whole issue that, you know, we discuss here on the different episodes about Hawthorne, and I think the main one is the episode 9, in which it's the point in which it breaks, is the incapacity to understand that social ties are so important. Or, for example, it is actually efficient to, in a production mindset, to have people having lunch, not only because they need a rest, but also because they need to build community. You know, we talked about banana time and how people need to have a feeling of meaning at work, and all these things are, you know, stripped out on a bad reading or more, you know, close to the text reading of what is Taylorism and how it was implemented.
This also comes in later scenes in the film when he works in the department store, I think, and one of the burglars is actually one of his former colleagues that, as much as they didn't have a great relationship or we're not really told about that, he still remembers. And when they're in the department store, they have a bit of a sort of friendly environment, yeah, despite a bad starting point.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like a surprise attack, exactly, and showcases exactly that, you know, work is inherently social.
Regarding the department store episode, I also thought that it was a very striking illustration of that time. Like, you see, like, all the products being sold in the department store. It's like it's beautiful. Like, it has wooden escalators, curtains being lowered when the shop is closed. It's a very luxurious atmosphere and the products being sold. But just before that, you saw like the how most of society was very poor, and the working population would never be able to buy the products that were being sold in a store. The store was exclusively directed towards the rich and famous and their needs, and the modern society, so to say, while the average human being couldn't afford those products.
I sense throughout the film that there are some things which are clearly contextual to that era, but there are so many other aspects that modern times are still modern times. So if you think when the protagonist leaves the, I think it was a mental asylum, unfortunately, those days, and he's reintroduced to society, the doctor says, don't do anything exhausting, don't do anything too frenetic, something like that. And the next scene when he gets into town is of total frenzy. And that is just typical of so many places in the world today. This, and I think even the starting scenes, they remind me a lot of any underground or tube station that I've been to during rush hour. And I think that there are quite a lot of jobs today that, despite having a lot of social and human relations to it, and not, or at least trying to be structured in some way to be the less dehumanizing as possible, there are actually quite a few jobs that are very tailoristic, and individuals are doing a small task repetitively, and they don't really understand what they're contributing to. I think especially, I don't know, in the banking world or in the world of coding and computer science. I'm not sure what you think about it.
Well, I have a good, funny, provocative question. Engineers on Google get food. So how do we place that? It's like, it's the realization of the feeding machine that we see.
What do you mean, get food? I mean, don't understand.
Google is known for having, like, you know, providing all kinds of niceties for the different workers, including fridges for cake. And, you know, it's not just to have, like, lunch in a canteen, but there is food is available at any time. It's like, it's there, one of the perks. Or any kind of Silicon Valley, or even modern organization outside Silicon Valley, in any kind of space that is almost like this, you know, coolness that is, oh, I'm going to have beer and pizza available for you anytime.
It's not only the food, it's also a massage therapist and a hairdresser. Hairdresser is also there.
I do think that that's an example of a sort of totalizing work environment. That's more like the department store. Everything that you could need is right there. You never need to leave. But the Billows feeding machine more reminded me of a product that's gotten a bit of criticism and generated a bit of discussion, which is Soylent. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, they have a tagline of don't want to think about food. We did. And so it's not that someone's pushing employees to drink Soylent. It's more a kind of internalization of this message of efficiency today, which I think runs in parallel or sets up the conditions for a food or a drink or a complete nutritious supplement or whatever it is to emerge. It's like a technological solution to this. I don't know what it is. Is it a human problem to need to eat? Maybe. Maybe we need to be more like machines.
Yeah, but for the corporation's point of view, so what is this? You know, so it is the advance of Taylorism, it's the humanization, it's dehumanization. It's hard to place sometimes the categories, you know.
Yeah, for all of this that the tramp and the gamine went through, the ending is still rather hopeful. I mean, the gamine is saying, you know, they're basically sitting outside after they've been essentially kicked out of I forget what transpired right beforehand, but basically she's destitute because, and she asked the question in silent film fashion, you know, why don't we just give up? What's the point? And the tramp reassures her that there is a point and that there is a hopeful future. And then the two basically get up and just walk on a road leading off into the distance. We don't know where they're going, but It's a hopeful, encouraging kind of an ending to say that, yeah, all of this is bad is going on, but there's still, as long as you have hope, then there's still a possibility for a better future.
And a funny fact is that Charlie Chaplin actually had prepared an alternative ending to the movie.
I don't
know if you guys read about this, but basically the alternative ending was that he was spending his time again in the mental hospital, and the gamine actually became a nun and entered the monastery. But this was considered too sad, and in the end, he decided to make this positive ending.
Yeah, I kind of like the positive ending a little better.
But it's also very open, you know, because in a way, if you think about the whole story, we have a story of two people that come together when all social institutions have kind of failed them. You know, he starts as a factory worker, the factory closes, reopens, goes back and closes again. And in the meantime, he's in different workplaces. He goes into prison, goes to mental asylum, back and forth, in and out, meets the gamine, which is someone that lost the father and the siblings. And again, it's an orphan, but it's never clear, but I think she doesn't want to go to orphanage because she's, you know, scared of what might that mean. It's never completely realized this story, but meets in Chaplin someone that can help. And they help each other throughout all the adversities. But in a way, it's almost like they tried their hand in all possible kinds of trades and any kind of possible situations, but it's more almost that there is no path until they find a path that is like uncharted, so to speak. Maybe they become entrepreneurs. That's the message.
Yeah, yeah. They're on their way to their first startup.
That'll make the movie even like contemporary, not even modern.
And that concludes part one of episode 53. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the discussion and found it valuable. If so, please tell your friends, colleagues, and students who may be interested in these topics about the podcast. You can also give us feedback, which we love to receive, via Twitter, Facebook, or through our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Don't forget that we now have a newsletter that comes out the day after each episode and contains some bonus and unique content. You can subscribe to that using your email only on our website. Please join us next time as we discuss part two of Modern Times here on Talking About Organizations.